With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Lucky Land Casino. Asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Everybody, and welcome back to From Complex to Queens, a Mason Avenue's minor league podcast. I'm Steve Saipa, and I'm joined by Lucas Lajos, Ken Lavin, and Thomas Henderson, the usual gang. So how's everybody doing?
Pretty good.
Good.
Not sick yet.
Always good. All right, so our podcast comes out every Monday, and this Monday just happens to be April 20th.
Just
and
please.
Being the fourth month of the year, that makes it 420. Mm-hmm. I believe that has some sort of drug connotations.
Perhaps.
Mm. I wouldn't know.
No, of course not.
For me, it's the boat I used to sail in high school was called a 420.
It's probably not good. I wouldn't be confident on that.
See,
boat.
It's 400, I believe it's like 420 some units of length in length. But yeah, like, yeah, I was sailing my 420 all summer. You were what? I didn't own my own. They were too expensive, but yes.
All right. So, who are we going to promote, extend, or trade of these pitchers that have rightly or wrongly, true or false, I don't know nothing, some kind of association with drugs?
Oh boy.
So first we have Bartolo Colon, who was supposedly doing steroids. Next, we have Tim Lincecum, who was supposedly a fan of marijuana. And last, we have Doc Gooden, who enjoyed the white powdery cocaine.
Oh, no. I'm going to trade Doc, personally.
See, what are we basing this on? Their baseball skill or our concerns for their general well-being?
I don't know. There are all three of them in the system, so we got to figure this out.
Is Doc trying to compare Doc's peak to Lincecum's peak? Because both of them had some pretty nutty years.
Yeah, Colon is like the safe one because he was good for a really long time. Like, he was never elite, but he was always good.
Man, Lincecum really, I thought Lincecum was better for longer. He really only had those two stupid good years, and then he was just okay for the rest.
Yeah, I wouldn't have guessed that. I feel like he was good forever, like, during that time.
So he was a rookie in 2007 and was pretty good, and then he went nuts in 2008 and 2009, and then he was just okay again for a couple of years, and then his back gave out, I guess. So
familiar story.
Meanwhile, Doc is, like, god tier for two seasons, scuffles a little bit, another really good season. Extend Doc, promote Lindsay Come, and trade Cologne.
Fair.
Yeah, sure, why not?
Yeah, I think I'm okay with that. Poor Bartolo.
Poor Bartolo.
Poor Bay.
He gets the longest tenure out of all of them and subsequently gets traded.
Doc ever hit a home run?
I think he was a pretty good hitter from what my dad told me. But
he hit 8 home runs.
Yeah.
There you go.
Bartolo hit 1.
Yeah, but
Ken confirmed.
It was a tank, though.
He also hit it off James Shields when James Shields was giving up dingers to, like, the Bat Boys.
I assume he's not pitching anymore. Is he still pitching, Shields?
I don't think so.
I mean, no one's pitching now, but...
I don't think he was signed this offseason. Mm. I don't even know if he pitched last season.
I think he's been out of baseball for a little bit.
Don't worry, though. The White Sox traded Fernando Tatis Jr. for him.
Yeah, that worked out.
The last year he played was 2018.
Mm. Yeah, so he didn't play last year.
All right, so, we talked about it last week. Coronavirus basically has put a damper on all baseball activities here. Spring training was stopped prematurely. Actual MLB season is postponed. Who knows how long. Minor league season has been postponed to, you know, who knows. NCAA shut down all their baseball seasons after, like, 2 or 3 weeks. High schools, if they were actually able to start playing, they stopped after, you know, same thing, a few weeks at most. And basically everything grounded to a stop. And I think in terms of discussion, that kind of affects us like a ton, probably more than any of the other people on the site, because we're not doing just like, what did the Mets do XYZ and this is what we think about it, but we have to like write and report on games and give opinions, but also follow and chart progression of players, the steps that they take forward, the steps they take back, blah, 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 so on. And not having a season means that we can't do that because it's not happening. And obviously, you know, professional scouts, the people that do it for real, not just us bumbling idiots, same thing is happening with them. You know, professional scouting is grounded to a halt because there's nothing to scout professionally. But one aspect of that whole big package that isn't really affected is the international aspect of it. The data is a little old that I have here. It's from 2018. But 27% of all players that were in the majors that year were foreign-born players. Minor leagues, obviously, there's a lot more players, and it's going to be that much more diverse. Dominican Republic, Mexico, Venezuela, they're the main ones. Puerto Rico would be too if it was a separate country. And then there's also smattering of players from other countries, you know, Nicaragua, Panama, Bahamas, Curacao, Brazil, a few others. Japan, Korea, and Cuba too, but they have different rules, so I'm not even going to really bring them up. But the reason why the international aspect of scouting, signing players isn't really affected that much is because by and large all these agreements have already been made with these players.
Steve, we're not supposed to say that. It's a secret.
Oh shoot.
We didn't talk to any of them until they were 16, Steve.
Excuse me.
Why are you telling everyone? Oh.
Well then it's a good thing nobody listens to this podcast.
You're gonna get a what the hell was his name? Copa Lopalopala, whatever. Yeah, that's gonna happen to you now.
Yeah, that was it. Copa Lopalopala.
Yeah, that guy. That guy for the Braves. I don't remember how many P's or L's or where they were, but it's something like that.
Basically, you know, as early as like 2 or 3 years ago, some of these players have unofficial agreements with teams, with the scouts representing the teams, and they're kind of like informal members of those clubs. They don't work out for other teams. They kind of have access to facilities and stuff like that. And yeah, the July 2nd date is just kind of a formality, really. But the biggest problem, though, is that with the way things work with there is that the players have no power. The teams have all the power. The teams could basically tell a player they're changing their mind the last second and dropping them, and the kid is screwed, which is not good, because never side with the billionaires. And another problem is that the teams are basically recruiting, you know, 12, 13-year-old kids, whatever. And what is your guys' opinion on that? Because it's kind of, I don't know, not a mixed bag. But, I mean, me personally, like, I don't know, what is the difference between watching a kid that's 13 and watching a kid that's 16? You're a minor, so.
I mean, I think we can break it down into what do you actually get out of this from a baseball perspective, and what about the actual ethics of it?
Well, the actual ethics of it. I mean, really, okay. What happens from a baseball perspective, we know a 13-year-old kid is very different from a 16-year-old kid. So
yeah, I fundamentally, I don't understand how they scout 13-year-old kids.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know how you even see what's going to happen in 10 years with a 13-year-old, you know?
Like, it's ludicrous. Ludicrous.
But a lot of the moral aspect of it is people that disagree with the watching a kid who's, you know, 12, 13, whatever, and basically entering them into these informal agreements. And, I mean,
you see it with NBA, with NCAA basketball, too, sometimes, where, like, middle school kids will be like, yeah, Duke contacted me. And it's like, what? Like,
yeah.
And it's just, you'll see stories like that, and it's like, I don't know, one, even if you're looking at it, you're taking the ethics out of it, which you shouldn't, and you're saying, let's project this future, this preteen kid's future in a sport. It's nearly impossible. But then when you look at it from the ethics perspective, it's like, this kid can't really, he's not equipped to make these decisions that you're putting him into, and you don't know if his parents have his or her parents have their best interests at heart. Maybe the parents just see it as a money thing and they're like, hell yeah, do this. Or maybe their parents do have their best interests at heart and they actually help, but you don't know that either. And it's, no one knows that except the parents and the kids. So that's really where it is for me. It's just like, it's gross.
I totally agree that the ethics are all screwed up.
Same.
No, and I'm not, this is not me making a defense of the current system, just admitting my own lack of expertise. I don't know how you design a better system.
But yeah, just I don't want to draft either.
Yeah, I mean, that has issues too.
Because drafts are bad, I think, even for college-level kids. Just let them sign wherever and figure it out.
But I think I'm more amenable to the idea of a draft, but there's so many other factors to consider before you even get to that point. The part that always bugs me the most is that a lot of these kids are just, first of all, they're coming from an impoverished country in the first place, so their education was going to be lacking from the start, most likely. But I feel like in a lot of these cases, they then wind up totally punting any sort of schooling past the age of 13 just to play baseball.
Yeah. Yeah, I can think off the top of my head of a singular player that education is actually important for them or their family, and that led to ramifications, you know, with baseball, Ubaldo Jimenez.
Yeah. And it's great that baseball can, or professional sports in general, can be this, like, almost magical event for some of these kids and families that can really change the course of their lives and their parents' lives, like, That's great and all, but you also have to consider the fact that for most of these kids, this isn't going to pan out.
Yeah.
And the fact that they're going to devote their entire life to this at the age of 13, and then maybe they get a one-time signing bonus that's a couple hundred thousand for most of them, maybe less. And then in all likelihood, 10 years later, be done with no skills to fall back on. That's not a tenable system. And I feel like if baseball wants to continue I don't want to say harvest, that sounds rather harsh, but access this talent, it seems like they have an obligation to also think about the general well-being of these kids. And that would include like better education, better nutrition, all of these things that you think would be pretty, that we take for granted a lot of the time.
At the end of the day, all of that entails spending money, and they are averse to doing that.
Mm-hmm. Once again, we could. I'm pretty sure we could do the math again and show that it's a trivial investment for the team. I don't want to call like $15 million trivial. Like that's something. But it's relative to payroll and everything else, and the potential return on the investment, aside from the actual ethics of yeah, you should do this.
Even if you took. I don't have any financial information in front of me, and that is not that's not a field that I really know anything about. But even if you took something as basic as just running a school, I imagine that running a school is not that expensive relative to everything else that these teams have for operational costs. And if you had a school along with the Dominican complexes that the teams have, how much more would that cost? Probably not that much. And you would be doing a lot more to help these players in the long run.
To provide like a quality education for like every player in your complex, you could probably do it for like 1.5 Alejandro Diaza contracts.
Yeah.
Like maybe.
So for a total of 3 Alejandro Diaza contracts, you could do all the changes to the minor leagues we've talked about previously, and also help all these poor kids out in whatever countries you're looking at.
Yep. You
know, I think Major League payroll will survive without 3 Alejandro Diaza contracts. Who do you think should take responsibility for this, right? Is this an MLB issue or a team issue? Because if teams... Go ahead.
I think it's an MLB issue. I don't think you leaving teams up to their own devices, they won't do it, or they won't do it correctly.
And also, you're going to wind up with the same problem if it's a team issue, right? You're going to want to have academies that kids come into at 12 or 13, and teams are going to be recruiting kids at 12 and 13, just like they currently are.
Yeah. If you make it an MLB issue and you're actually serious about enforcing rules and stuff, you could put in pretty strict penalties on the teams who violate the rules, and then it'll stop them from actually doing it instead of just kind of letting, like, making it an open secret and no one does anything about it. But I don't know what could convince MLB to kind of, it would just piss off their owners, and I don't think they would do that, unfortunately.
I mean, perhaps you could imagine a scenario where you have, like, I don't know, 2 or 3 MLB run academies per nation or whatever, or however many is commensurate with the population, where you're going to educate the kids and also have them play baseball, and then that gives major league teams a more controlled environment from which to sign them. Something along those lines.
If you want to institute a sort of international draft, I feel like that would be a good way of going about doing it and ensuring that the players are properly protected, taken care of, whatever. Is that anybody who is eligible has to sign up through kind of programs like this, where the players will be educated properly, will be given nutritional assistance if they need, will be given, you know, housing if they need, whatever the case may be. And that way, baseball as a whole, whatever, you know, is looking out for them more than just, here's a contract that we may or may not revoke in the future before it actually gets signed, and have fun.
I think a draft would make sense in this context. If you had those sort of academies. Look, I don't think any of us would claim to be experts on how the dark intricacies of how the international market works. there are definitely other people out there with more knowledge than us about this.
Mm-hmm. With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
There's a lot of stuff going on in terms of international signing. And just as kind of quick refresher or primer for anyone that's not really familiar with, on July 2nd, all these contracts get signed. Teams have a limited amount of money to spend on players. They can divvy it out however they want. They can say to themselves, we're not signing anybody, and not sign anybody. Not a good move, but it is possible. Forever. Yeah. In the draft, you know, in the domestic draft, there's obviously a correlation between the size of a bonus and talent. When it comes to international signings, that isn't the case necessarily. You'll have guys that don't get very large bonuses that go on to be very good players. Ronald Acuna, he got a $100,000 signing bonus, which is not that much for a player of his caliber, or a player who became a guy who became a player of his caliber. Jose Altuve, he got $15,000. That's laughable. Yeah. Obviously, the Braves and the Astros, they got their money's worth. And
it's so funny you say that, right? How much did Kevin Maiton get? Like $5 million. That's 500 Jose Altuves.
And last year,
like nothing.
A few of them got very. I mean, it's a very regular thing because this is what happens when you are scouting and evaluating, you know, 12, 13, 14-year-old kids. Yeah. You could project them to do X, Y, Z, whatever, but some of them, they don't grow and become strong, and there goes your investment. Some of them, you don't think that they were going to do something, and they do, and all of a sudden you have this immensely talented player. Last year, Yankees and Oakland, they spent $5 million on two individual players, Jason Dominguez and Robert Pawson. And that's the highest bonuses ever for non-Cuban, non-Asian players. Obviously, we don't know if those guys are going to pan out because it takes a long time. The highest bonus that I found of a guy that really didn't work out at all was Jairo Barrios, who was signed by the Rangers in 2012 for a $4.5 million signing bonus. $4.5 million in 2012 is probably more than the $5 million from last year that the Yankees and A's spent. But he basically didn't even really make it to AA. He's still in the system now. He got like 90 at-bats or something in AA. Weren't particularly great. But that just shows that, you know, what looks like a sure bet is not necessarily a sure thing. I think the Mets have done pretty well for themselves over the last couple of years in the international market.
I feel like obviously, always their best prospects are always international kids.
Yeah, I mean, there are the
part
top
of that
prospects.
Is they keep shredding the upper minors.
Yeah, that and they draft like shit. So
yeah,
the combination of the two, I think.
The high-profile signings have all kind of worked out. Ryan Mauricio, Andrés Giménez, Francisco Alvarez, they're all very big bonuses, and they've had good prospect careers so far. Alexander Ramirez, they signed him last year. He's another high-profile signing, about $2 million. You know, hopefully he works out when baseball starts again. But the Mets have done a pretty good job of identifying and developing kind of that undervalued talent too. Some more guys that were signed last year, but you know, it's hard to get a gauge on them because there's very little playing time and data for them right now. There's Junior Tillian. He was signed for $185,000, and Eric Santana was signed for $350,000. And they both stood out in the Tricky League, which is like the informal complex league that newly signed kids play at before they can play in the DSL. Robert Dominguez, he was signed for $95,000. A lot of people out there are calling him one of the biggest steals in the class last year because, and technically it's still going on this year. It doesn't switch over until July 2nd. But a lot of them are saying he's one of the biggest steals because stuff-wise, age-wise, he stacks up very favorably to some of the best high school senior pitchers. So that's, you know, a steal for $95,000 to get someone like that. Year before, they signed Aroldo Catalina for $150, and he's a promising kid, you know, big fastball, good slider. He was traded for, you know, 31 innings of Wilmer Font, so good job there.
Peak value.
Mm-hmm. 2017, they signed Junior Santos for $275,000. I know Lucas is not really that high on him, but there's potential there.
Absolutely.
2016, they signed Luis Santana for $200,000. He got traded. He didn't have the best year with the Astros, but he was also hurt and pushed really aggressively. Dyson Acosta was signed for $70,000. Michael Ohtañez, he's not really that good, but he does have like a high 90s fastball. He was signed for $35,000. Shervin Newton, he was signed for $50,000. A lot of guys were more properly evaluated, I think, here. Unfortunately, or maybe fortunately, because again, who knows how these things really, no one knows how these things work out, but the Mets are not really connected currently with any of the guys that are considered some of the best players out there in the market currently. The Oakland A's are connected to, the Astros. Have basically an agreement with the top player that's available right now, Pedro Leon. Nationals, this is all based off, of course, off of Baseball America's rankings, evaluations, and I think Baseball America does it better than anyone else out there.
Yeah.
But the Astros are connected to some of the top guys, the Nationals, Cubs, Marlins, basically everybody. I'm not going to say that, you know, every team is connected to a individual international free agent and a rookie, and it's like the draft where everybody gets one guy. That's not always the case. There are teams that have multiple connections to multiple players, but it is unfortunate that the Mets are not tied to anybody.
Yeah. Makes you wonder what they're up to.
Yeah. Probably sleep. Nothing good.
Sleep at the wheel, you know?
That's what I'm assuming.
I wouldn't expect Brody to have a big grasp on this, which is a problem.
Well, you never know.
He has 500 other GMs, who, so maybe one of them does, but I think Omar's still there. But
oh, no.
Yeah. Wasn't that one of the big reasons why he came back, like, pushed, like, the international market?
Yeah, he had connections. He generally was seen as a guy that was good at identifying talent, although I have some doubts about that, and I feel that Omar really just kind of did what everybody else did, and the media just kind of gives him the credit because he's the New York GM, you know.
That's fair.
But at the same time, the whole international free agent market is just this one big web of connections and who you know and who's on the up and up and who's crooked, and it's just, there's a lot going on. So, I mean, it could be very possible that Omar, you know, does know a guy that knows a guy that knows a guy, that kind of thing. And
I also wouldn't be surprised if, like, most front offices have that type of connection at this point.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not sure that that's the advantage that people give it credit for. At this, it's so late in the game. It's so, like, everyone has been doing this for so long that it's hard for me to comprehend a team not really caring about it at this point. Like,
are you saying that every team has the content to create a crimes.xls?
Oh, no.
Spreadsheet?
Probably.
No, wait, wasn't it a Google sheet? This is not an XLS. It's a,
no, I think it was Excel.
It was Excel? I thought yeah. They had like a Google Drive with a fucking crime spreadsheet.
The new one is going to be them talking about it on Zoom and MLB.
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
Shit.
MLB hacking their Zoom. And
it's going to be some random guys accidentally Zoom bombing the Dodgers front office. That's like, wait a sec.
Huh. I could see that happening.
Where's AJ Preller at these days? He's with the Padres, right?
Yep.
He probably has his own crimes XLS going, you know?
He always struck me as too paranoid for that.
You know, he
can't imagine he has a particularly long trail of evidence.
he was the guy, the first one to get busted for the international signings way back when he was with the Rangers.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Not nearly as bad as the Braves, but he did get in trouble.
Yeah, the Braves are really the quote unquote example that baseball tried to set.
Mm-hmm.
I'm almost certain it won't work, but
no.
Any kind of sanctions, any issues that teams will be given, there's plenty of money to make up for it, so.
The crazy thing is I don't even know they lost anyone of significance in that whole,
they were forbidden from signing Poisson, who just signed with the Athletics for $5 million.
That's true, but I mean, like, in terms of who they had already signed, given that Maitán is kind of flamed out, they've basically lost nothing.
Right. I mean, they can take these sanctions on the players that they've lost, wait a year or two, and then just go crazy in the market.
Yeah.
If they feel like it. Not a great system.
No. Suboptimal.
Yeah. But unfortunately, like we were saying, fixing it is opening up a whole new can of worms. Mm-hmm.
I mostly don't know how you would get the teams to listen to you, even if you try, which is a depressing thought. Like a
harsher penalties.
Like a, it's kind of being very cynical, but yeah, harsher penalties, sure. But I'm just worried that teams will be like, "Nah, screw it, we'll do it anyway."
Yeah. At the end of the day, the issue, I think a lot of issues kind of trace back to just the commissioner of baseball being another. One of the old boys club, you know, former owner or whatever, friends of former owners, for there to actually be any kind of meaningful change that's positive, that's good for the players and the teams and MLB as a whole, you really need to have an independent commissioner with, you know, a strong hand.
Well, if we had that, the Wilpons would have been forced to sell years ago.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Of the bunch of guys that are considered, you know, some of the top talents that are available right now, is there anybody that you kind of wish the Mets were really in on? Is anyone, like, really excite you?
I try not to – I mean, maybe this is just me. I try not to get too hyped up about a couple paragraphs of description for all these – it's like I'm pretty sure you could copy paste these paragraphs year after year and no one would notice.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, I have no idea if any of these dudes are actually what these paragraphs are saying, and I'm not saying that the authors are lying. I'm just saying that it's hard to get excited.
Mm-hmm. I initially was gonna be like, you know, okay, let's just talk about a guy who seems cool, but exactly. It as I was reading all of these blurbs. It just, you know, nobody, these guys are so young and so undeveloped and so raw that it's kind of like, oh, okay. I mean, 99.9% of everybody is a shortstop right now. 99.9% of everybody, you know, they have good bat speed. 99.9% of everybody, they are, you know, 5'10" to 6'1", and, you know, 175 to 200.
Room to add muscle.
Yes, there's room to add muscle.
We'll
so.
Grow into power. Uh huh.
I mean, you know, all these kids are like that because they're all better than everyone else in their playing.
Right.
Yes. You already have a talent pool of the best guys, so how they do when you throw them, the biggest fish in the pond, in a small pond, into a bigger pond, like, who knows? And it's hard to kind of get hyped about that. But there's one guy, and he's not technically, you know, he's not someone I technically was going to even bring up. Because, like I said earlier, guys from, you know, Japan, South Korea, Taiwan, Cuba, I'm not going to talk about. But Yelky Cespedes.
Oh, no.
I've seen Cespedes, a decent amount brother. Of him over the years.
Is, yeah.
Is that how you pronounce his name?
I believe so.
Okay.
I just want them to sign another Cespedes.
Exactly.
Keep them in the family.
Yeah.
You know? I'm all for it. I also imagine Yoenis will tell him, these guys
don't. Do not sign.
Don't do this. That's not, I mean, you give them a million more than anyone else, and then that kind of smooths over a lot of those.
Yeah. His brother's ranch is already right there. It worked once.
Let's just get rid of the hog. Clear out the hogs on the ranch, and that'll prevent any future issues, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's been deemed eligible to sign. He's not going to until July 2nd of this year when the 2020 to 2021 period begins. It'd be foolish for him to because most teams have already blown through their pools. But yeah, he's probably the most exciting guy because A, he is talented, and B, obviously he has name recognition, whereas all these other kids do not.
He's also, I mean, I would argue the Mets are in a mode where more immediate talent is more interesting, just given where they are in a contention cycle, and he's 22, while the rest of these guys are like 16.
Yeah. He would instantly become their best outfield prospect.
Mm-hmm. Right to AAA. Based on organizational depth.
Yeah.
True. That is true.
I mean, it's not out of the question that he could contribute in late 2021. Like that there is a that is not him. Ludicrous.
Yeah, that's fair. Which I don't know. I would be falling over myself to sign an older international player. I don't know why more teams aren't.
I definitely agree with you. Actually, at the same time, I feel like that's just an area the Mets, for years, have just neglected. Back when things were much more open, they weren't really in on Puig or Cespedes or Solar or Chapman. Like, none of those older signings were ever they never really got in on any of them or any of the Japanese guys, really. Not that Otani was ever going to sign here, but
hey, they made a PowerPoint or whatever the hell it was.
Yeah.
And I remember we all got so excited.
And the last time they signed an older international guy was Ishiguro in like 2010? Or the other Japanese reliever, Takahashi? Yeah. He came up in that save.
And/or Hasunori.
Yeah, that's it.
Ryota Igarashi.
He's actually he's Chinese, right? Or Taiwanese?
Who?
Irigashi? I'm
Japanese.
He's Japanese as well? Okay, so I'm just wrong. Point is, the Mets just have ignored this for years.
Yeah, I mean, the last guy I can remember them signing from, I forgot his name, Gerson Molina, who is a outfielder on the Columbia Fireflies last year. I think he might have made it to St. Lucie. He was signed out of Cuba.
Mm-hmm.
Before him, there's Leidner Ricardo, the catcher, who was with St. Lucie for like 2 or 3 years. You know, not premium talent, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
It makes me wonder why they're so risk-averse to go there. Was it just something with the money? You know, and Sandy at the time and now Brody just being more cautious I don't know.
I mean, I will say, like, at the peak, some of these contracts that were being handed out were ridiculous. Like, Rusney Gastillo got $85 million from the Red Sox or something ludicrous like that.
That was just an arms race, though. That was like a loophole in the international signing rules.
At some point, it did get a little, and it was after the premium talent was already gone mostly. Who was the one the Diamondbacks signed? Lopez?
Yoan Lopez.
Yeah.
Pitcher. They also signed the hitter too, the third baseman, Yosmani Tomas.
Yeah, that's who I was actually thinking
and
of.
He was bad. Yeah.
Arisbel Ribarena was the shortstop for the Dodgers. Just never hit. So I think at some point it's getting ludicrous.
I mean, it's not risky, even with the older players.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, I don't know. I don't want to say the Red Sox aren't. They're not hurting for money, even though they traded Mookie Betts for free. But, like, I'm sure the owners use that stuff as an excuse, and then here you are trading premium talent for no reason. So. Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, basically, anything that could be used to justify not spending will be used.
Even spending, like past spending, which is.
But yeah, so it'll be interesting to see in a couple of months what goes down, baseball or no baseball, and especially with given the fact that there's no college baseball, there's no high school baseball going on. The draft is going to be very weird this year. It'll be interesting to see how teams approach the international market because they have a lot more data, not necessarily more current data, but it'll be interesting.
I have no idea how you prepare for the draft now.
I don't know.
Because at least with other sports that are having drafts, like, they had a season already. Like, the NFL draft is going to be virtual, and that's fine, but, like, you have the season to have seen these players. But, like, you're going to make a decision on a kid after 2 weeks? Like, I don't know how you do that.
And those drafts are easier in the first place, too.
Yeah, exactly.
The gap from amateur to pro is smaller, and you have college tape for everyone.
I wonder if teams are going to players and having them work out with them and almost like kind of combine kind of things that the NFL does. Have players throw bullpens with them, have players work out with them, and just we don't really see that side of things from as the members of the public. But
that's possible for sure.
I feel like that's the only way to do it because you'd need to get a good grasp of their stuff and their physicality and their ability to hit and whatever else.
Do you guys know that episode of South Park where they're dealing with the economic crisis? One of them's trying to return to Margaritaville and he goes to the people who are trying to save the economy.
Yeah.
They literally cut off a chicken's head and let it run around the board and wherever it dies is what they do. That's how the draft should happen this year. You just make a board with a bunch of names, you cut off a chicken's head, you throw it out there, and alright, we're going that guy.
Yeah, that might be how things are done this year. Alright, any last words for the week before we go? Yes, not. All right. If anyone
keep
has any,
social distancing.
Yes. If anyone has any questions, comments, whatever, you can go ahead and send us an email at our email address from complextoqueens@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter and shoot us questions there. I am at Steve Saipa. Lucas is at ElVlahos343. Ken is at Ken1191. And Thomas is at SadMetSeason, SZN. Subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcast from. Please rate and review them. And, of course, thank you for listening. And we will be back next week. And until then, love the Mets. Love the Mets.